Welcome to You've Gotta Taste This, the podcast where food people tell you about recipes that you've simply got to taste. I'm your host, Adam Roberts, and I've been writing about food for almost 20 years. I love to cook, and even more, I love to talk about cooking. So let's get started. My guest today is Homa Dashtaki, the founder of White Mustache Yogurt, along with her father, and the author of the brand new cookbook, Yogurt and Whey. Here's the message that she sent me.
Hi Adam, this is Homa from White Mustache Yogurt. You have got to try this yogurt whey and the magical pancakes that we can make with it. Good luck, and I look forward to chatting about it. Bye.
So here's my conversation with Homa all about those whey pancakes, and spoiler alert, they were truly the greatest pancakes I've ever made. I am not joking, and I have pictures and the recipe up on my blog, amateurgourmet.com, so head over there if you want to make them too. And now here's my conversation with Homa Dashtaki. All right. Well, Homa, it's so nice to meet you. Thank you so much for doing my podcast. Congratulations on your brand new cookbook, Yogurt and Whey.
Thank you so much. It is great to be here.
So I'm just going to cut to the chase. So I asked you to send me a recipe to make, and you sent me whey pancakes, basically, which is the liquid that comes out of yogurt when you strain it. And then you mix that together with eggs and flour and sugar. And when you sent that to me, I was like, okay, like pancakes, right. You know, how good could that be? But right. I made them for breakfast this morning, and oh my God. Wow. They were so good. I had no idea that whey could do all that. So why is it so good? What's the secret?
Yeah. So I was really scared to send you the pancakes, 'cause like, it's just pancakes, you know, and I want to really make a splash with the whey and to like talk about how special and amazing it is. And I'm like, no, pancakes, like that's how special and amazing it is. Like this recipe that's totally familiar to all. And my whole mission is to make whey accessible and, you know, familiar and not this like weird, like, whoa, what is that? And like whey has done all sorts of different things, but I think the reason it works really well in pancakes is because it's like very acidic. So it's not like anything I've invented, like buttermilk is in pancakes and like mm-hmm. we've used milk in pancakes. But the whey has no fats in it. So it's just pure liquid whey. Like all of the solids remain in the yogurt that you're straining mm-hmm. off. And that liquid is acidic. That liquid is tangy. That liquid is still milk. So it has like a dairy mouthfeel. But I think because of the probiotics and because of the acidity, it also tenderizes a little mm-hmm. bit yeah. of the flour. But the real magic I feel in the pancake is that it's still got a ton of natural sugars in it. So mm-hmm. it crisps up as you fry it. And so those natural sugars just caramelize in a different way. And I also was like, maybe you should do the turkey, but then I thought that was a huge commitment.
Yeah, that's a lot of cooking. But the other thing about the pancakes was the fluffiness because of the, the reaction between the acid and the baking powder yeah. and the baking soda. So they really bubbled up. And, yeah. you know, the first batch I made, I had like a ton of butter in there, and I gave those to my husband because he can eat anything and stay skinny. But the second batch I made, I used less butter, but they got really fluffy and like puffy. And yeah, like when I ate them, they were crisp on the outside, fluffy on the inside, but they also were tangy. So yes, I was a fan. But I feel like, you know, your whole book is about yogurt and whey. So I guess the first question I would really ask you is, how did you get so into yogurt and whey?
So I've always had yogurt in my life. We made it at home constantly. I took it for granted. And I accidentally ended up starting a yogurt business because I wanted to have an activity with my dad. Like we would go to the California farmers markets, have a little booth. And, you know, we would make 12 gallons of yogurt a week. And the reaction that we got when we went to the stalls of people being like, wow, this is amazing, is I realized that like no one had had yogurt like this before. It made mm-hmm. very artisanally, very slow. Our yogurt takes 3 days to make from start to finish. And that was like a very big, like aha moment, like, oh, I think we're onto something. Mm-hmm. And so everything just happened kind of very naturally. I was like, okay, now I'm in a yogurt business, and I'm straining out the yogurt to make whey. And because I'm working in small batch, and I'm like boiling the milk, I'm like incubating it, and then I'm straining it. Like, I feel every single drop of milk that goes into that batch of yogurt. And while like Greek yogurt and strained yogurt is familiar, this liquid elixir that you get after this whole process, I'm like, that's like the most magical drops. Like, you know, it's extremely hydrating. It's got all these nutrients. And I'm just like, I don't even know what to do with this. So I started doing everything with it. Like, I used it from skincare to food to the turkey to like these very simple pancakes that I'm so thrilled that you liked.
Do you drink whey, like as a drink?
I drank whey. And when I first like thought about making it into a product, I just put it in a bottle, slapped a label on it that said like liquid whey. And I was like, I'm going to be a millionaire. This is going to be awesome. And it was like, wah, wah, wah.
No.
Like, nobody knew what it was. They were like, I don't know if I'm going to like it. Like, why is it neon yellow? I'm like, I just it's yogurt whey. It was like, it was just so obvious to me. And yeah, we always just drank it kind of like Gatorade. Like, that's how I always like, it was just super hydrating. Your body digests it really easily.
I have some extra from my straining, so maybe I'll drink it this afternoon.
I suggest drinking it. And my favorite is actually making a cocktail with it in the evening.
What's the cocktail? Works. What do you make?
I do super simple. I like adding pineapple juice and rum. That's my favorite. Or you can do, add a little bit of lime, some slices of jalapeno and tequila. That's also good. Provides a very creamy, like almost like when you have an egg white in a cocktail.
Yeah. I like that. So in the book, I mean, I should tell people, like, this is a gorgeous book, and it's coming out. When does it come out? It comes out the end of February.
Officially on March 7th.
March 7th. And you didn't mention the name of your business, but you run, you know, a yogurt empire called White Mustache. And it's always like listed as some of the best yogurt you can buy. But what I thought was so cool is that you give away your trade secrets. You basically give the recipe for yogurt right out of the gate. And I was reading it, and like you said, it's a 3-day process, and it involves blankets. It involves a large pot. It involves a teacup. So since this is already in the book, would you mind walking our listeners through the process that of them trying to create or actually creating this yogurt at home?
Yeah. I will credit my friend Nami for encouraging me to reveal all my secrets. And the reason is integral to the process a little bit, because she was like, you know, if I give you my recipe for my mom's secret, you know, noodles, you will be able to get it to taste the same, but you can't recreate it. In fact, it'll just become your very own.
I love that. That's really nice.
Yeah, it was so beautiful and so generous. And I'm like, good for you, Nami. And it really inspired me to be like, that is the whole, like every single batch that we make at the factory is even different, you know? Right. And like, now we've gotten like to treat it like as an art, as a science, as a gift, as like, you know, this magical process. And so the thought of this now existing in people's homes and them making batches that are their very own is so exciting and beautiful to me. Because even like the milk that you would use in California will be different than the milk someone uses in Oregon.
It reminds me of like sourdough bread, like when everyone was making sourdough. It's like, you can follow a recipe for sourdough, but it's like, there's so many factors that will change your loaf from everybody else's. So yeah, as much as it's a proprietary thing, there's also the fact that like most people are not gonna go through the trouble of making this yogurt. I mean, if they buy this book, they will, but like, you don't have to worry about someone running away with your business. It's like,
no, but this is my crazy immigrant paranoia. I'm just like, what? How does everyone not want to do this? This is like amazing, fun, like exciting thing.
I want to. I'm going to do it now. I mean, it's so funny because like I'd read so many cookbooks that were like strain yogurt overnight and you'll have labneh. And I was like, that's so much work. Like, I can't do that. And then like, I did it for this recipe. It's like, that was the easiest thing in the world. I literally just put cheesecloth in a strainer, dumped in yogurt and went to bed. But okay. So your recipe. So
that's how we do it at the factory too. We like put in cheesecloth in 2.5 gallon batches, but the recipe, yeah, it's, I wrote it almost like a dance, and I wrote it kind of like, as like a tribute to the sacred ingredient, which is milk. So I encourage that when you start off making yogurt, you use the purest form of this ingredient, which is like the mother's milk of this cow, right? And so get raw, unhomogenized milk and take the time to source that if you can. Like that's where like the magic and the masterpiece really is in this milk. And then we're just going to celebrate this ingredient the whole way through the process.
Okay.
So then you heat up the milk. And I like to get the milk all the way to boiling, because then you don't need a thermometer. You know when that milk is boiling because it's about to ruin your whole fucking stove.
that's fine.
and you know, so like you get it to boil and then you cool it down. And you put it in like an insulated bowl, like earthenware bowl or a ceramic bowl. And then you just wait. There's so much waiting in the yogurt making process. And I believe that like as you're waiting for that yogurt to cool down to temp, like having a conversation around it helps it to like taste different. It gets it like a nice vibe. Like those scientific papers you read about like how playing music to plants or talking to plants. And so we play reggae to our yogurt most of the time.
is that in the book? Should I add that in the margins to play
some? That's a secret for your listeners. Secret.
Okay. All right. I love it. Okay.
Yeah. But then when it gets to temperature, again, it's like a very instinctual temperature. Like we do a pinky test, which is not something I've invented. This is like every culture's grandparents knows about the pinky test. And it's just a temperature that you can hold your pinky into the milk for 3 seconds. It's kind of like where yeast also gets activated. Mm-hmm. And it's not too hot and it's not too cold for the probiotics to thrive and to inoculate basically the milk and turn it into yogurt. And I think the best part of making yogurt at home is that you can use mother culture to make your next culture. So that mm-hmm. does live on over time. And you just take a few scoops of like the yogurt in your fridge, you put it in the teacup, you add the warmed milk, you mix it up, dilute it, and then pour it into your cooled down milk that's like perfectly at temperature. And
I love that it's a teacup too. It's like, it could be like something else, but I like the specificity of a teacup. That's really nice. Yeah.
I think that's just what I always used. And I was like, you know, the memories might be specific to me, but it's the only way I know how to share them.
And in terms of the mother yogurt, I mean, could we go to the grocery store and buy any yogurt and mix it with, you know, it doesn't matter like if it's, fancy or cheap or just yogurt mixed in with the milk. Okay. Correct.
You just want to make sure it's plain, unflavored. So don't accidentally pick up vanilla, like just super plain, unflavored. I think Faye is my best nationwide available starter. But then after you do that with that, the store-bought starter, you can use your own homemade yogurt as the starter going on. And it'll take a life of its own. It'll just, you know, be your own very thing. And then once you add that culture to the cooling down milk, you wrap it up in blankets. And the idea is for that milk to just hold its temperature, to let the bacteria do the thing. And then you set it at night and then you go to bed and the yogurt sleeps, you sleep. And in the morning you unwrap this blanket. And like, you'll take off the lid, you'll take a whiff of like that milk and it will have turned into yogurt. It's like the most magical process. I feel like if I were ever to like lay an egg, that's what it would feel like.
We'll do that on the next podcast. That'll be the follow-up episode. So
yogurt,
that's
lays egg.
That'd be really popular. I read a little bit about you. You and I have something in common, which is that I went to law school. You were a practicing lawyer for a while. And so in terms of getting into business with your father, like taking this left turn, like what was that decision like? And did you foresee that this would become your career when you started doing it?
No, I didn't foresee that. I really liked being a lawyer. I like the clothes a lot, and I just like that it was work that I wasn't emotionally invested in. Like that, right. It was something like I'm just going through the motions, and now I have a product and a business that is so intrinsically tied to my identity, so intrinsically mm-hmm. tied to a lot of beauty, but a lot of pain about like my history, and. Like sometimes I miss those days when I just walk into an office, do a job and leave and like not have to worry about it. And now
what kind of law did you practice?
I did securities law. So like corporate law.
Got it.
And in the 2009 crash, I got laid off because that work just totally disappeared. And I was at a big corporate law firm. And I thought actually after I got laid off that I would like now use my skills, because I thought these were like the only marketable skills I had, to just, you know, work at a smaller shop or a different shop. And I found myself gravitating towards helping other small food businesses, mm-hmm. like in very weird ways that surprised me, like negotiating their lease or negotiating a buyout contract or negotiating a, you know, a foray into like producing for frozen aisles. And I was just like, there's something about me gravitating to this world, and I just didn't fight it. But it took me 3 years before I even like entered the yogurt space. And even when I did that, I was like, oh, this isn't going to be a real thing. Like, I'm just doing it with my dad. I'll do it to spend time with him. It was when we got shut down in California.
Okay.
About 3 months into going to the farmers markets, and it was due to a regulatory issue.
All right.
And that triggered this perfect little marriage of my legal past and my like, you know, yogurt future. And I'm like, well, I'm going to fight this. And I fought like the regulations. I fought the thoughts behind it. It was like 2 years of going up to Sacramento, lobbying for this little yogurt business to thrive. At like, we were making like 8 gallons a week, and it like, I wasn't getting the permission that I needed to. And so I picked up and I went across the whole country. I went up to Oregon.
Wow.
I went to Tennessee. I even thought about going abroad. I was like, I'm going to prove the point that like, we can make these like handmade products safely. And I ended up in New York, and for what it's worth, like the cliche of being like a food town, like Brooklyn really gets it. And Brooklyn gave me home, and they were like, yeah, you know, like you're not up to snuff with the regulations, but we want to work with you because we know that when you generate even 6 jobs and a product that's like from here, that's really important. And
what was the issue, like specifically, like what was the regulation that you were fighting?
So human hands aren't supposed to touch dairy at all. From the moment it goes into the heating process to the moment it gets capped into the final product, it's supposed to all be done by machine. And I think that's why my yogurt does taste different, because after it gets heated up in the vat, it all gets done by hand, very similarly to how I encourage you to make it at home. Like we mimic that process to a T, and like, we honor that process to the point that it's like inhibited my own growth sort of as a business, but like in a way that I'm very proud of. And so we also fought to be like, no, we're going to strain by hand. We're going to fill these jars with like 8 cherries per jar by hand.
Right. I see. So it's really just the manual labor of doing it versus the automation. That's so fascinating because it's like so dystopian that like our government wants like robots to make our food rather than humans. But
yeah. And I went from being really irate and indignant and angry and very young about it to being like, oh, they just don't know. They don't know that like, you know, they're trying for ease of safety and public health. I do think like a lot of it is like barrier to entry, issues, but I now welcome the conversation as opposed to just ready to like, you know, I think that's how that's the best way for me to sometimes fight it now, to be a little bit more.
What about the milk itself? Cause you talked about unpasteurized milk. Was that another battle or were you able to use that?
Yep. So I've picked my battles with doing it handmade process. And the thing that you can do at home that I can't do at the factory is use mother culture to make the previous batch. I have to use a powdered culture to start. Okay. That breaks my heart a little bit. But that's a fun, amazing thing that you could do at home.
Got it.
That I can't at the factory. And then in terms of milk, it is easier to source homogenized pasteurized milk, and like when you're making a small batch at home, I recommend using raw unhomogenized milk, which for a long time in California was like illegal. Like there were SWAT teams breaking down the door.
Where do you even get it in California? I mean, I've never seen it. Maybe I don't go to the right places. Like maybe like Erewhon would have it or something.
Maybe. I also think that there are like cottage level regulations. Like if you have 2 cows, you're allowed to like sell your unpasteurized milk, but it like it might require a trip, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I remember like learning that like European cheeses are so much better than American cheeses because they used unpasteurized milk to make them. And I guess importing that kind of cheese like for a long time was illegal, but I guess they maybe loosened up a little bit, because now if you go to like a cheese shop, you'll see like unpasteurized this or that. So I guess people are, you know, I think as food has become more important to people in America, these regulations are changing. But it's cool that you're at the forefront of it and you got to use your legal skills.
Yeah, I think my legal skills gave me the confidence to be a food person in a way.
Yeah.
And I think the reason it happens with unpasteurized milk in Europe is they just have like such a long-standing history of it. Mm-hmm. And I came with a very similar perspective of like, oh, no, like this form of milk is the safest, most delicious form of milk. And so let's talk about the actual health reasons behind why it does feel safer if we've like homogenized and pasteurized our milk. So even now we get all our milk in New York from the Hudson Valley region. It's called Hudson Valley Fresh, and it's a co-op of family farms. And they're just so wonderful to work with, and just generations of dairy farmers that we get to interact with and learn from.
That's so cool. Well, the other aspect of your business that I wanted to ask you about was working with your father and what it was like starting a business with family, because, you know, that's a big venture, especially if I did that with my family, I'd probably go crazy. So I'm curious what that was like.
Yeah, no, I am. There are going to be a lot of four-letter words that like to really describe this, like, honestly. I think the nice parts of it, the really special parts of it, is that you get to interact with your family in almost like non-family ways. Like I got to talk to my dad about like, how long should we strain this yogurt for? How much honey should we add to this flavor? I got to talk to my sister about like, you know, how do we staff up for this next step we want to do? Should we launch popsicles? Like these kinds of conversations are so outside the realm of like normal family conversations that it was nice to interact with them as individuals. And like, we have a common, like, you know, thing to achieve. And that part was really special. And I think the rest of it is like, is challenging, right? Because you just in it every day with each other, and you have to be really good about maintaining boundaries. You have to be really good about like keeping space. You have to be really good that like your 17-year-old high school self doesn't pop up and like yes. just get triggered by like a criticism, you know?
Oh my God. I mean, I'm a writer. Even when I tell my mom an idea for something and she's like, no, that's not good. Like I'll spend like a week, like, why did she say that? And
it's I know.
It's easy to get triggered, you know? Yeah. So,
yeah. And with my dad, I've actually now like just kind of pushed him aside from the business side of it. And he does, I mean, he's gotten older, so it's a little easy, but he mostly does like recipe development, comes up with new flavors. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it is hard. Like when he criticizes me on a business decision, I'm like crippled for like weeks. And it took me a while to be like, you know, I'm going to just create this little boundary and you might not be the person I go to for some advice.
Well, it's a nice segue, actually, because, you know, a big part of this book is it's not just yogurt. I mean, there's a lot of recipes in here for Persian dishes, like Persian egg drop soup I just saw, but like stews and things. So I was curious, can you talk a little bit about your family's background? And you talked about immigrant culture, but like coming, you know, how you sort of, you know, carry on the tradition of your family's, your ancestry and the dishes in this book.
Yeah. I think that's also been such a blessing to this line of work, because I like just push that aside when I like put on my lawyer persona.
Right.
And now I fully embrace kind of like the messiness that is me existing in America today. Mm-hmm. And my family is Zoroastrian. We come from Iran. I was born there. I was born on the eve of the revolution, and I came here when I was 7 during the Iran-Iraq War. Wow. And we moved here to Orange County, California, which had a cluster of other fellow Iranian Zoroastrians. And it made us feel very safe. And like to this day, I feel very safe with this community and just get to feel like myself and not have to explain anything. Like if they were listening to this podcast, they would be like, this yogurt thing, like, why are you making such a big deal out of it? You know, and also like they would have like 10 other different ways that they do it.
A teacup, you got to use a thermos. Yeah,
yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, that's funny.
I just love that tethered feeling I have with them, and so we've had that since we immigrated here. And just always kind of held on to that as I've moved across the country and through my life. And the food is almost my way of being able to talk about that. You know, I could have used other props in order to access these identity issues or these like things that I find very funny and quirky and weird. And also like probably extremely universal, like, you know, that this, you know, Iranian Zoroastrian immigrant has probably a lot in common with someone who's completely opposite, you know?
Right, totally.
And I think food does that, whether it's the writing or the recipes or the frustration. Like there's a couple recipes in there I wrote that like took me years to even like comprehend how the technique was, like, because I learned them from elders who were just like terrible at giving recipe notes, you know, like just do enough of this and wait for like that to get stretchy. I'm like, what does that mean, stretchy? But those brought up stories, they brought up memories, they brought up sadnesses that I was able to like, you know, tap into not only personally, but maybe just put in the book.
Well, what's so interesting to me too about this book is that I had a guest on in a previous episode, Karan Soni, who has an Indian background, and the dish he had me make was called keema pow. And it was sort of lamb, but it's like cooked in yogurt. So it's sort of like hot yogurt with like all these spices and stuff. And that was a revelation for me because, you know, the idea of eating yogurt in a savory dish that's warm, it was almost like an Indian sloppy Joe. Like it sort of had that texture to it, but it had all the spice and warmth. But the yogurt lent it so much depth and acidity, as you said. And it worked so well. And so I'm looking at these recipes and it's like, yogurt stew, ashimasu,
feast. That's the one I was thinking of. It's very much like what you describe. It's so comforting. There's something about the yogurt savory that is very comforting.
Yeah. And so, I mean, is yogurt as central to Persian cooking as it seems? I mean, it feels like you centered your book around this, but would other people also say that yogurt is a central ingredient too? Is that sort of how it feels?
Yeah. I mean, I'm obviously a biased person to answer the question, but I think given that I landed on it kind of not thinking, I was like, this is a food that I take for granted. And the only reason I picked yogurt to make with my dad to take to farmers markets is because like, I knew we could make it in our sleep. I knew we ate it all the time.
Right.
I think I could easily have chosen tea or rice. And both of those recipes are also in the book pretty predominantly. Like there's one ingredient. I think Iranians do one ingredient things as a base really well, like with milk or with rice or with tea and or with grapes. And I think that I wanted to celebrate that in the book. And I think yogurt is a predominant feature. Like I remember it being at every lunch and dinner table. I think it helps in digestion. I think.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
And we don't have it for breakfast, which was the real weird, you know? So, and a lot of my whey recipes are breakfast oriented.
Right.
But also my yogurt I know is eaten here in America mostly as a breakfast food. And I've flavored my fruit on the bottom as a sweet yogurt. When Iranians traditionally have most of our yogurt savory for lunch and dinner.
That's so interesting. Yeah. I made granola last week with so much sugar and so much honey, and we were eating it with yogurt, and like my husband's like dumping it in. I was like, you know, it's kind of like candy. Like we're having candy for breakfast with a little yogurt. I was going to say though, I mean, you mentioned the probiotics in the whey, but it feels like our culture has shifted a bit in terms of interest in gut health and gut bacteria. And it feels like that's got to be a good thing for your company and stuff. And I was curious, like, how has that growing interest in probiotics and gut bacteria, like, helped you market your business?
Yeah, I think I'm a little bit at a disadvantage because I've never approached the yogurt as a science. So I don't have any of those stats or any of those, like, you know, scientific details that I like to tap into, because I do think every body is different and every body responds to food differently. But I do believe that like the probiotics that are in the yogurt do help you digest your food. I do think how you digest your food and your general gut health in general, like, affects your mental health as well.
Sure.
And I think that all I can do is just make this purest form of yogurt accessible to people. And I know that my probiotics are alive. I know they're alive because they made yogurt and, you know, and in the bottles of whey, there's billions and billions of probiotics. Like, I carefully picked those 7 strains of bacteria to be in each batch for both the taste and for the health, you know, diversity of bacteria. So I can do is just provide it. And if people resonate to it because of the taste or the health, or they love it, then I'm so grateful for that. And I'll just leave it in your hands.
Yeah, no, that was well said. So I'm curious, like, as somebody who's never started a food business, can you talk a little bit? You talked about going to farmers markets and selling it there, but I feel like we kind of missed the step where your yogurt started to show up in stores and make its way around the country. And so how did you go? I mean, did you go on Shark Tank? Like, what was the secret?
No, there is no secret. And I did it very slowly. And over 10 years ago now. So I came to New York. I had my little heartbreak in California in 2011. We fought for the regulations to change for 2 years. I realized it wasn't going to. And then I came to New York in 2013. And when I came to New York in 2013, I just wanted to prove a point that, like, I can make healthy yogurt and delicious yogurt. And that was kind of it. and I went to 4 stores with little jars of yogurt as samplers. And I was like, you know, here's a yogurt. If you're interested, let me know. And it was just kind of like a crapshoot. Like, I didn't even have a place to live in New York City when I went there.
Okay.
And we were making yogurt out of Salvatore Brooklyn Ricotta's facility near the Navy Yards. And those 4 stores that I went to with the samples all put in an order. And it was
really?
Like, and they were like, when can we have them? And I was so delusional. I was like, 2 weeks. And so I ordered the jars. I ordered the milk. I made the yogurt. Back then I was making in like the same ceramic bowls that I advocate for in the recipes. And then 4 stores, you know, turned into 6 stores, 6 stores turned into 8 stores. It all happened by word of mouth. I never pushed it. I was like sleeping on friends' couches and Airbnbs. And
what were the stores? Were the stores just like mom and pop shops, or were they like Whole Foods?
It was Ann Saxelby's, Saxelby's Cheese.
Of course.
Yeah. And it was Gastronomy 491 up in the Upper West Side. It was the Brooklyn Larder over at Park Slope. And I hate myself for forgetting the 4th one.
These are all bringing you back memories because I used to live in New York. So, I mean, Brooklyn Larder was right in my backyard because I lived in Park Slope.
Yeah, they're wonderful. They're still there. They're incredible, chugging along.
I'm curious, though, in terms of the labeling, because you have such cool marketing, like, you know, the labels look really cool. Like, when did that start? Like, how did you do the design and, like, make it look really posh and, you know, lavish, yogurty?
My first label was designed in like Word document where I like did half the mustache and then duplicated it to like mirror the other half, and it was terrible.
Comic Sans font.
Comic Sans, exactly.
Right.
And like it was in, I always put it in a glass jar because I was like, I did a lot of work to get this yogurt to be at the state it's in, and I want you to see it. Like, I want you to see it, and I want you to see the fruit, and I want you to like, I want you to know that I care about you as you're eating it. And it was just like a little love letter I put out into the world. Like, I was like such a cheesy sap, but I was, you know, always wanted it in glass for that connection I think it provided.
I love that.
And we got very lucky. Keith O'Brien, I found him in 2013 through a friend, and he was a designer, and he designed the very first labels of White Mustache, which is the same hand, it's his handwriting on every single jar.
Really?
And mustache that he drew. And he also designed the book cover, and he did the dessert section, which is so just beautiful in this book. And so Keith has elevated the brand and the labeling of the brand to where it is today. And you know, it all happened so slowly. And I think sometimes when I hear people being like, "Oh, how did you do this?" I was like, you know, this happened slowly. And I always hope that that makes people a little comforted that like, oh, then I can do it too. You know?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to happen overnight. You don't have to get aggro and get on Shark Tank. Like, I never spent more on the next step of my growth process than I had to spend. You know, it was just like, if a store wanted yogurt, I would let them know, like, this is when I can do it, because this is when I can pay for it. And the thought of like overextending myself scared me, because I didn't want to compromise on the quality. Right. And part of that is why I can prioritize the way, right? Like, this very interesting ingredient that most people haven't heard of, I'm literally swimming in. And for me to take the time and explain it, as opposed to grow my yogurt empire, is a luxury that I've given myself by being slow and thoughtful. And I just think it's so exciting when like someone like you has made the pancakes and loves them. And just like, I'm like, yay. Like,
they're so good.
We did it. We like figured out a way
I meant to ask you, what do I do? So I have all the strained yogurt, which I guess is like labneh or whatever, but like, yeah. I put it out, like I smeared it on the bottom of a plate yesterday and I put a salad on top, which was nice. But like, what is your favorite thing to do with strained plain yogurt?
I will use it on a sandwich, like just like that, like smear it and go savory with it. Mm-hmm. If I was making pancakes, I would just like almost treat it like an icing as well. Yeah, and just
that's what I did.
Like, to use that. I like to use it as a dip, mm-hmm. if I'm trying to get through it. And I'll usually put a pickle in there of some sort, like either pickled garlic shoots or a brine, like some, like the yogurt, like I've found, especially with the whey drinks, like tangy marries tangy really well. Mm-hmm. So they go together. So like adding a little bit of something pickled, chop it up and put it in and use it as a dip with like pita chips or.
That sounds delicious.
And it pairs nicely with like any sort of tangy shallots, onions. Mm.
So do you ever get sick of yogurt?
Do I ever get sick of yogurt? I don't really get yogurt. I only get like expired product. And even like my kids are like, Mom, are you bringing yogurt home? And they're like, no. So if we're doing any taste testing, then I'll bring it. I think I got a little sick of the baked goods because I tried and tested a lot of baked goods.
I'm sure. Yeah, there's a lot of them in this book. I kind of want to make the muffins next because I still have a little bit of whey, and those sound really good.
Yeah, the muffins are great. I also recommend the biscuits. Those are really, really good. I mean, yeah, I'm biased. Yeah, you should ask like my sister. She's more like diplomatic. I also hope you get to try drinking the whey as like a cocktail.
I might do that. Yeah.
A mocktail with just fruit juice.
You have a recipe in here now. So in terms of the non-yogurt recipes, you have a recipe in here that's very in the moment right now. I feel like a lot of people are doing this on TikTok. Like I see it all the time, and I saw Samin do it on her show. And I've not been brave enough to do it, which is Persian rice tadig. And you have your recipe. So can you walk us through how you make it and why I shouldn't be nervous when I do it?
I'm still nervous when I do it, but I encourage you to just embrace it because just like with yogurt, like once you do it, it's like no big deal. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the anxiety is built into the recipe, and it just practice makes perfect, but don't be afraid of it only because it is that single ingredient celebration. So the ingredient here is rice. And it's a very similar sort of process to the yogurt making. Like you parboil the rice for just 8 minutes. So you'll boil the water, you'll add your salt, and you get the rice in there. You rinsed it off. Then you get your rice in there. And then you parboil it till it's 8 minutes. And the way I describe it, and it's so interesting to write a recipe that I know so many women, including the great Samin, have made and have like, you know, perfected. And I'm like, I'm not saying anything new, but sometimes it's a matter of like holding somebody's hand through it for their first time and thinking about like how I like love and revere this product. And it's like that 8 minutes where that rice is parboiled, like you just pinch it between your hands and it breaks along like the little spine. So, you know, it's like cooked, but it's not cooked all the way. Okay. And then after that 8 minutes, you drain it out and you put your pot back on the stove, let it heat up so it dries out totally. Add some butter and some oil to coat the bottom of the pan. If you want an all rice tadik, you just leave it as is. If you want a potato tadik, you like cut like a few slivers of potato and place it on the bottom. And then you take your drained rice and you pour it right back on top. You turn it into a little pyramid and a couple holes all throughout and throw butter in the holes. And I usually take a piece of towel and wrap the lid up with it. So then it kind of like sits on top of the pot all steamy. And I am not a good orator. Like I so prefer to like invite you to my kitchen and mm-hmm. do this with you right next to me. And
sure.
even if I'd said it perfectly, I still would prefer to like just have you with me and like treat it like a party.
Yeah. But so in terms of flipping it out and like knowing when it's done, like, is there a secret to knowing when it's time to do that?
My mom claims that she can smell it. Like she can smell the moment that mm-hmm. it's ready. And I'm like, I can't fucking smell it. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. And right. to me, it's different because I haven't, like, I'm sure I could get it down to a science, but I never have because I never use the same pot or I never have the same amount of rice or I've parboiled it too long and mm-hmm. I have to kind of like, you know, just deal with it. And so I think you just kind of wing it and it's totally, it always turns out fine. And,
okay. That's good to know.
And even if it doesn't turn out fine, you can just douse it with yogurt and add some salt and sugar. And you're
all right.
But yeah, it really does turn out fine every time. And I actually think the tip I would give to first time makers of the rice is people get nervous and they flip it too soon. So just right. go an extra 10 minutes, like just fight the urge to worry about it. Like call somebody who sometimes aggravates you and lose track of time and then flip it after that. You know,
I feel like as I get better at cooking, like it is about pushing things right to the edge, like even making caramel or something. It's like when I first made caramel, like I would like stop right when it turned like amber, and now I wait for it to get like so dark but not burnt, so it feels like it's the same thing with stuff like this.
Yeah.
I'm curious, like when you've gone back to Iran on your visits, are there things that you eat there that you can't get in the United States or that taste different there than they do here?
Yeah, and like I feel like I sound like my dad did like a while, but like the fruit just tastes different, like
okay.
just the air that it's grown in, like the cherries and the shatut, the king mulberries, and you know, even the apples, like they Wait, just
what's shatut?
Shatut is a black mulberry, but it's like squat and juicy and very tart. And yeah, like you eat enough that you have like a tummy ache and your fingers are all black and juicy. And it was, you know, it's those food and communal cooking is done so much more there. So like I miss eating meals that are made in like pots of like for 50 people. And that kind of, you know, like just the food could taste however way the food tastes. It's just mm-hmm. how you eat it and who you eat it with is something that I always love reconnecting to. And again, like the fruit just tastes so, the melons in the summertime are wild. Delicious.
What about the yogurt?
I think the most controversial thing I might say on this whole podcast is I still think my yogurt's the best.
So. I'm sure it is. Yeah, yeah. I'm sure it is. Yeah.
But like you get the yogurt there in like huge plastic like 1 gallon buckets because uh-huh. that's how much yogurt most people eat, and so
got it.
You know, and I miss like the fresh bread that you dip into it. But the milk, the yogurt, excellent. The cheeses, they're excellent.
Well, as a final question, you know, I started this whole thing by asking you to send me a recipe that I had to taste and it was wonderful. But I'm curious, what was the last, you've got to taste this thing that you tasted that was like the best thing you've eaten recently, whether it was at a restaurant or at somebody's house or in your own kitchen or on vacation, just something that blew you away. And it doesn't have to be yogurt related. It could be anything.
Yeah, that's a good question. I recently went and had a very simple pasta dish at my friend Alex's house. And he just made like a very simple pasta with tomato sauce. And it was like so good. And he had so perfected it. And I was actually at his house to teach him how to make yogurt. And I was like, oh, this is so good.
Made it so good? Like, what was the secret?
I don't know. I think it just was like the texture, the seasoning, mm-hmm. just the right amount of pasta sauce. and also something that I don't normally like make myself. Like I'm not a very good pasta maker. I was like, damn, this like he knows what he's doing.
Okay, that's a good answer. I make good pasta. So next, if we ever get to meet in real life, I'll bring you pasta and you can bring me yogurt.
That would be an honor. Great. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for talking and congratulations on this gorgeous book. I hope everybody goes out and buys it. And I'm going to go eat some yogurt and whey for lunch. So thank you again. Nice
Adam,
meeting you.
Thank you very much. Bye.
All right, that's it for this week's episode of You've Gotta Taste This. If you want the recipe once again for the pancakes, head over to amateurgourmet.com. And if you want to follow my cooking adventures, you can follow me on social media at amateurgourmet on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter. All right, I'll see you back here next week.